It's Terry Stacey for your trusted local independent American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer, B&W Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Drains. Owner Chris Ambrose says second opinions are important.
You want to make sure that you are confident in the service that you're getting from whoever. The diagnostic that we give you may be different from the one that you got before. What we hope is it'll give you peace of mind that you're getting the right solution for your problem.
Get your free second opinion from B&W by going to BigBlackTrucks.com, your trusted local independent American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
10:15. Turn 16, and the final turn 17 is waiting, and the stretch to the line is here. Felix Rosenquist wins heat one at the Thermal Club Million Dollar Challenge. Scott McLaughlin goes through.
Pelo is going to get to the Advanced Auto Park checkered flag by 5.2 seconds over Marcus Armstrong. Armstrong will come home second. Graham Rahal will grab the third spot. The green flag is in the hand of the starter, and they come off of that final turn now. Beautiful formation as they head to the start-finish line, and a spectacular jump by Alex Pelo. And again, they're three wide as they set sail for turn number one. Pelo has the position, but look at the strong move by Scott McLaughlin on the outside.
26-year-old Spaniard Alex Pelo wins the Thermal Club Million Dollar Challenge.
Let's go!
Super, super happy. I cannot express how happy I am of how all the weekend's been since practice one. We've been really, really fast laps, and the car's been amazing. So everybody back at the shop and everybody at Chip Ganassi Racing did a tremendous job.
Hello, welcome. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. Fresh off of IndyCar racing from this past weekend in the desert outside Palm Springs, California, and Alex Pelo reminding us of 2023, dominating the entire weekend and certainly exhibition race day of the Thermal Million Dollar Challenge. Thanks for joining us tonight. Kevin Lee along with Kurt Cavan. Elijah Robertson is in our studios. We have much to discuss. We will comment on the comments on this past weekend. And then there's news, future of the Long Beach Grand Prix, Indy 500 update, who's going to be entered in cars in Long Beach are also still questions. We'll get to some of your Twitter comments. I mentioned today at KevinLee23, if you have a thought or an idea for this event moving forward, happy to hear it and talk about it and discuss it at KevinLee23 at Kurt Cavan. So I have some thoughts. I want your thoughts first on the weekend. We'll get to performance in a moment, but I think people are talking about the event because it was unique. It was new. It was a trial.
So I must start with the idea or the notion that now in the last 30 years of IndyCar racing, this is, I'm going to say it is, but it might be one of only two venues that I've not been to. This time I sat it out from afar. I didn't go, and I've not been there, so I can't speak to what it's like on the ground, which is rare for me. Normally, I'm in a position to have evaluated being on site, and then
I think that's a good perspective, though, right?
It is. It is. Yes. I just wanted to clarify that because normally I can speak from both angles, and therefore I have unique perspective at times because I've done both. But in this case, strictly a TV watch for me. And I would say, first of all, it's a beautiful facility and it's a beautiful backdrop. And if you liked the rich and famous feel of the Thermal Club, well, then that's good. Because I think one of the things IndyCar needs to do maybe a little better, because I think it works for Formula One, is to feel rich and famous at times. Not all the time. I don't think you want to make, you know, hang your hat on rich and famous, but I think there's a time and a place for it. And it certainly came through in the broadcast. It came through with the homes. It came through with the mountains. It came through with just about everything. So it is, you know, it's good to feel that way once in a while. And again, I think that's one of Formula One's drawing cards, is that it's for the elite. It is for it's you can't buy your way in here. I mean, it's too rich and famous for you. And so I think that works on Formula One's behalf on a number of levels. So doing that once in a while from an IndyCar perspective is good. And it felt that way. And it, again, it looked beautiful. I thought the racetrack as a racing venue was better than I expected, because we hadn't seen racing. We saw racing, you know, we saw testing last year, but we hadn't seen racing. And I thought racing was going to be pretty good. I'd like to see 27 cars. I thought 12, you know, it just, I thought it got a little too spread out on a big track. I think more cars would have been fun to watch. Now, maybe turn one would have been a mess because it's pretty tight down there. But, you know, I'd like to see a full race or at least a full field and see what that looked like. Maybe that's not possible. But my overall, you know, viewpoint from viewing is it looks like what I think we want to look like. Some of the time we want to look rich and famous more often. And this certainly presented that.
We don't want this every weekend. We may not even want this twice in a season, but that was kind of a thought that I've had. What is wrong with this once per season? And that's kind of a dilemma that, you know, when you see some of the comments and some of the rational comments, and even some of the angry ones that we want to be anti-Formula One, so let's not go down this path. But then there are a lot of people that also think, no, you should do some of the things that Formula One is doing because that's working. I don't know what the answer is. I get that idea that let's be opposite of Formula One, but I think we have that in 16 or 17 other weekends. And this is the one that is presented that way. However, I'll say this. So I kind of feel like this ticked both boxes.
Yes.
So we certainly, and now we can get into the presentation a little bit and the dilemma that we faced in a made-for-TV event. There wasn't a specific mandate or direction from IndyCar that this is how you're going to present this. So we talked amongst ourselves. What, and this is what you always ask if you're presenting anything as a show, especially in sports television, what makes this event matter? What makes it unique? Why should you watch? Let's start with, okay, it's an exhibition race. So we're going to need to find a reason for you to watch. Well, there's money involved. So this is relatively big money for IndyCar. But yes, we're all aware that the golfer who finishes 12th this weekend makes the same amount of money or whatever that is. I don't know what a golfer makes, but probably makes the same amount of money that whoever finished third in this event and maybe even who won. We know that a starting NFL quarterback makes this amount of money in a quarter of play. So in that scheme, it's not big money, but it is still big money in our world. So with that, we're still searching. What makes it unique is the backdrop and the environment. And then the format and the exhibition part of it and no points part of that. But then back to what I was talking about, that it wasn't really exclusive. And I mentioned this in my piece to start the broadcast. I was asked to kind of look big picture, and I gave a number. You know, at one point it was $2,000. That's a bit pricey, but even I think you could argue that for the access you were going to get was in line with other events. Can you go to the Super Bowl for $2,000? And when you do, are you getting to meet any players? No and no. I know this. And by the way, they dropped it to $500, and that was the number that I used. For a three-day suite pass at St. Petersburg, I know this because I just paid the invoice, $1,600 plus per person. No meet and greet, no pit pass for every single person. I had to buy extra for pit passes for people, $1,600. Now, I understand that was a real race. That was a points-paying race, and it's a wonderful venue. And there are so many other things outside the racetrack. But if you are someone that likes to meet crew members, drivers, team owners in a more relaxed environment, I could not recommend this. And I think if you read some of the message boards from the people that were there, they would not recommend this any more highly. It was a wonderful experience for those people. For $167 a day is what this turned out to be. I'm going to guess there were probably 300 to 500 normal folk there And then some of the others were tickets purchased by Thermal Club members. I don't know what I've heard a number. I'm not going to share it because I've not seen that. But I don't know if that included Thermal Club members or outside people. But I know this. All of our partners with Jackson's Racing Program that are looking for events to go to and talking about costs, if they do this again, and it's only $500, if they're available to go to Palm Springs, I'm telling you this should be number one on your hit list if you want to do something unique.
So $160-some a day is exactly what I paid for a park hopper pass at Disneyland.
Good
for
point.
For one person just a few weeks ago. So
and maybe you would have seen Tony Kanaan if you went the right day and you would have seen a driver.
I did see Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse, but that they're all about the same height as Tony. But anyway, it's what a really nice experience this must have been for people. I do know some people who went there as just fans. I have not spoke to them, but I can't imagine that they didn't get a good experience. To me, what I would relate it to, and this is something a lot of people have had the opportunity to do, I bet it felt much like having a garage pass at Indy on, say, the Monday after qualifying or on a Tuesday afternoon at Indy when you could walk around the garage, you can stand at the ropes, you can watch the guys work on the cars, the drivers will come by.
How about 10% of that crowd?
Well, I meant on a regular Tuesday morning. That's, that kind of thing.
You mean a Tuesday morning when they're not going to be on track?
Yeah, when they're not going to be on track for a while.
Okay, yes, but not a Tuesday morning of a regular practice. For one, I don't think a lot of the members cared about meeting the drivers. They weren't walking the garage, and that garage area is massive, and you could see, and if you watch some of our Peacock coverage, maybe you saw that in some of our shots. It's just a big empty parking lot. So, you could walk from the back of pit lane and walk out there and see every tent and see which team it was and see what's going on and who's around there. And there were drivers hanging around there, but mostly where you saw the drivers is they walked up to get the ice cream. We weren't kidding about the ice cream. It was really, really good. And the food trucks were good. It was kind of all inclusive. And I think the bar was open as well. I don't know if it was just beer and wine or what, but I grabbed a beer at the end of the day on Sunday at whatever time we finished at 12:30, and there was no charge. And I think that's the way it was all weekend. And you looked over and there's Alexander Rossi standing in line and there's Marcus Ericsson standing in line. I think every driver went back. One thing I liked about it, and I'm going to ramble off and on here, I liked it for the crew members who we are one race in, and I'm worried about them being burnt out at this point because of how much they've been at it since the end of last season with hybrid testing, start and stopping. Is it today or tomorrow? Rasmussen, are the rookies testing at Texas? I know Rasmussen
I think it's
is testing it tomorrow.
I think it's tomorrow.
And I think I'm assuming some other rookies are testing. Maybe he's the only, but anyway, there are
some
teams doing that. There are teams at IMS at the end of this week, right, for the hybrid test.
That's true.
There are other teams at the beginning of next week testing normal configurations for this year's race for the GP. There's the two-day oval test on April 10th and 11th. Then you're hauling back out to Long Beach, so on and so forth. They're working hard. They're busy. I enjoyed the fact that these guys, and I thought of this too, that, at the end of Sebring last weekend, or even the end of this last Friday, I almost earned my money. I was on air for whatever, 6 hours or something like that. People commented on Twitter about how many steps I took, and it was an early day through a late day. The crew people do this every single week, Thursday through Sunday. The Andretti people were there till 10 o'clock on Saturday night repairing a car. So I enjoyed the fact for them that they got to go have some ice cream in the middle of the day, except probably whoever crashed. Hopefully somebody brought them ice cream.
Yeah.
So it's not for everyone, and we can revisit how it's presented. And I suspect if we go back a second year, we've kind of already covered that. And I suspect if we go back a second year, it might be a points race. And then now you have your hook. You're not looking for something different. Well, people watch the lifestyles of the rich and famous. I don't. I'm not interested in that, but an awful lot of people are. And they're interested in reality shows. And they're interested in what the other world looks like. So I think that was what our best guess was. Let's do this. Let's show something cool that none of us are ever going to get to experience. Same thing as when I worked on the Fort Lauderdale boat show. I can't get on any of those boats unless I'm working for it, and nor can most of the people watching that show. But sometimes people just like to look and dream a little bit. Obviously, not everyone does, but that was kind of the principle. I can't go to Monaco. I'll never be able to go unless I'm working Formula One to go to the Monaco Grand Prix. And it's a terrible race. It's a terrible race. But I enjoy watching that because it's fun to dream.
Yeah.
It's just a cool backdrop, and that's what I thought we had. Right or wrong, that's how we looked at it and decided to go for it.
I don't think that's a problem. As I said at the top, I think doing that, you know, once or twice a year, and we do that sort of when we go to Long Beach too. We have this feel that there are boats, and the, you know, St. Pete has that appeal as well. You know, there are boats and people partying on their boats, and I, you know, I'm not going to be able to afford that boat. Neither are you. So there are things about those two events that we like from a prestige standpoint. Now, from a really telling the story of a new venue, I think that's what we have to kind of separate. And honestly, if you hadn't had 9 hours worth of testing on Friday and Saturday, I'm not sure you would have felt overburdened by looking at the lifestyles of the rich and famous, because you would have done that on a normal race weekend. You would have done that over about 3 hours instead of nine. But you do that largely because you're trying to fill time. But think
and
back
not
to
many cars are circulating because they don't have enough tires.
And think back to, if you can remember back when we first went to Barber Motorsports Park, 2010? That was very much of, this is an Augusta of racetracks.
Sure.
You know, just down the road, and so a little bit further down the road, but you get my point, kind of in the same part of the country, same kind of presentation. The motorcycle museum is spectacular. You know, the vantage points, just kind of, you know, you really felt like you were someplace special that first broadcast at Barber Motorsports Park. And the second time we went there, that wasn't the focus of the broadcast. So to your point, the second time back at Thermal, it will feel from a broadcast standpoint different. But I think it's, you know, again, the few observations that I heard from people were mostly about the fact, if you parceled it all out, was that there were 9 hours of essentially commercial for the Thermal Club. And I think there was probably a little more reason for that. And again, 9 hours is part of the equation. You just had a lot of time that you had to fill.
So I don't know this for certain, but my best guesstimate would be that Thermal wrote a check to IndyCar. That's normally how it works. When someone hosts an IndyCar event, there are occasional rentals, but generally the promoter is paying a sanction fee. And so in this case, Thermal was the title sponsor. There's a reason why Thermal was on the graphic, on the broadcast. My guess is because they paid for this event. So let's think about this. Now, I was not told this. Maybe someone else higher than me was, but seems to me as a partner that that's also part of it, that we need to satisfy the people that are paying the bill. And let's look at the reality. IndyCar, you know, I read the comments that they should be somewhere else. Well, go ahead and tell me. Tell me who has invited IndyCar. And secondly, who has been willing to write a check to IndyCar to pay the purse, to pay part of the leader circle, to pay the cost for the series to go there, where you can race in February or March. I'll wait. Listen, you let me know. I'm not aware of anyone, Kurt. Who is it?
You're right.
They're not turning down anyone. There is nothing right now. We're hoping that changes. So that's another reason to be aggressive and see if you can create another venue. Is it perfect? Far from perfect. It's not perfect when you can't host a real crowd. But as I've said before, we unfortunately have had some points paying races with really only about three times the crowd that we had there on Sunday. right? And it looked terrible, but it was a regular points paying race, and that was the most that you could get to attend that. So most things are not perfect. That would be one of those that is not. So if you continue this, it is going to be a unique event. And if someone is going to pay you to come, you have to give them some sort of a return. And for the club, it's not about ego. What they're thinking is, can we possibly sell one membership, two memberships? One membership, by the way, is going to pay for whatever they paid for IndyCar. And it might not even be this year. If it's just someone that has the idea, and it may take them 2 or 3 years to pull the trigger on this, but if that one comes through, then that's a bonus. Now, from IndyCar, the other side of this, what their incentive might be, maybe they even cut them a break on the sanctioning fee. I don't know the dynamics of the economics, but their incentive would be, if we find one member, and there are quite a few billionaires there, and many, many 100-plus millionaires, people that could start their own team and fund it without sponsorship, or their company is the sponsor. If you find one of them that can do that, or even better, just becomes a sponsor on a team and brings a cash influx, now is the chance of that great? It's probably not great, but I'm telling you, there's a chance. And if you're out prospecting, that's as good a place as any to go prospect and see if you can find something. Or maybe it's even just one of your drivers making a connection with one of the members who likes to drive their car and wants to hire a coach at $3,000 a day. And that's some off-season work, especially for the young drivers. The young drivers do some coaching on the side.
Well, I don't think there's any question that what you laid out from IndyCar's perspective is a good path to take. Why else would you be interested in partnering a member with a driver for the weekend? Basically, you know, you're going to job shadow here a little bit. Job shadow may be the wrong phrase, but you get to embed. That's
we'll give
maybe
you
a
taste of what this would be. You could do this full time if you're a part of this program. And you can then bring all your friends if you're really a part of the program.
Yeah. And Don Cusick told you one of the first moments of the weekend that he has had several people invest in his Indy 500 program who are members at the Thermal Club. The other part about NBC is, if you watch races, if the race has a name, let's call it the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach. If Acura hasn't paid the network doesn't call it the Acura Grand Prix. And this is any event, any sporting event. So if NBC didn't have some incentive to call it the Thermal Club $1 Million Challenge, then the graphic would have just said $1 Million Challenge. They would not just give Thermal that.
Might
free.
Have. It's also possible NBC was doing IndyCar a solid.
Yeah, but generally speaking, that's the way it
works. Generally speaking, you are correct.
So, you know, there is a fee to be the title sponsor of an event, regardless of the sport we're talking about, and there is a television arrangement that goes with it, and that's separate. It's connected, but it's separate. And if you don't want to pay for the television buy, then you don't get the mention on the television broadcast.
I believe the contract with IndyCar says we are required to mention the official name of the race a certain number of times. And maybe even graphically that is stated in the agreement. But yeah, it would not be in every single mention like that.
So anyway, I think it's a win-win for all parties. I think it's great, even though the Thermal Club likely doesn't need IndyCar to be a thriving business that it is. Hey, picking up a few extra memberships is good, you know, brand building for the Thermal Club. And at least in motorsports circles, there's a lot of people who now have a much better familiarity with the Thermal Club because of that event. It was on television for a good 2 hours on Sunday and at least 2 hours on Saturday night. So and Peacock coverage, obviously, and people talking about IndyCar. Well, while
social media impressions.
Yeah.
You add up social media impressions.
It's big.
And beyond selling memberships, there are, I think, track rentals there.
Sure.
I think there are some teams that do some rentals there. And what you now have, and I've talked about this with a place like VIR or Anytrack, Mosport, whatever, Anytrack, it adds to your credibility. It adds to your value. If you have an IMSA or an IndyCar race, certainly a Formula One race, because when people are looking to do a track day, whether it's a kid doing Skip Barber or more likely, you know, someone our age doing an experience, they like to be able to say, yeah, I drove on a track where IndyCars or sure. high-level sports cars, IMSA cars have raced. So I think that provides a little value, and it allows you to charge a little bit more for your track day. COTA's track fees are really expensive. If you want to go do something at COTA, it's really expensive. If they did not have a Formula One race, that price is in half of that. That's why it's expensive, because Formula One race is there, and that is the only place in America where Formula One currently races, that where you can go do a track day. You can't do that at Miami. You can't do that at Vegas. Indianapolis is the next, where there has been a Formula One race. You know, and you can go back to Watkins Glen and Sebring and things like that. So what worked? Well, maybe let's start with this. Before we get into what worked and what could be tweaked, I still don't know everyone kind of understands the circumstances of how we ended up where we were. Why wasn't this a points race? Was one. My opinion would be, one, we wanted to kind of see how it raced. I don't know that they wanted to do something without really having a sense of what it's going to be. Maybe. And maybe more important was they couldn't do hot stops in the pit boxes. My understanding is those pit boxes were 30 feet. You really need 35. 35 is the least amount that we have at places like Mid-Ohio and Toronto, and they already extended it just to get that. So that's why I don't believe we had hot stops in the feature, and it was just simply a static pit stop. You know, you change your tires, and there's no hot stops. So to have a points-paying race, you've either got to extend the pit lane more. I do not know if that's possible there. It probably could, but it would cost more money. I know this. There were people looking around of the different tracks. So there's the south and the north. I believe we were on the south. Could be wrong. I could be backwards on that. Pit lane that used to probably hold about 13 or 14 cars. There's another one on the opposite side. If you were watching Peacock coverage, it's where I interviewed Don Cusick. So that is the other pit lane, and it's probably set up for about 14 or 16 cars. There has been a thought, if you do a points race, kind of like what was going to happen in Nashville in the street race and sort of what happens in Detroit, split pit lane. That's the first idea. Then I heard, well, that might be tough because time lost is different. So you're going to have to do like a stop and hold of 5 seconds for the one that has a shorter pit lane or something like that. But that's my best guess. Pit lane is why you didn't do a points race this time around. In this format, because a lot of conversation was, well, this didn't make a lot of sense doing it once the championship started. Why was this the case? Well, it's because it was a six-week gap. They hoped to be racing at Texas. And my understanding is, didn't they think, like last August, that they were going to be racing at Texas this weekend?
I think. Yeah, I mean, it was certainly a late decision.
And that they were disinvited. And one of the reasons is because, well, one, Texas has a race in the spring for Cup. But probably even a bigger reason is that all of the Texas Motor Speedway employees, SMI, were at Circuit of the Americas. That was their event this weekend, head-to-head. So that became a no-go with NASCAR. Your only option for Texas was going to be sometime in September. So it filled that category that, okay, it's better than going 6 weeks without anything. And NBC already had the window saved for Texas, so they said, you can still have it. So there you go. You get some visibility. I saw the comments that how the first reaction was that the rating was not good. I'll remind people, I think it was 813,000 is what Adam Stern pointed out. Virtually identical to Texas last year. I looked it up, did a quick Google search, 830,000 for a points paying entertaining race. Last year's Texas was entertaining, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Same time slot. I believe that was at 12:30 Eastern time. Same time slot, probably the same conflicts. You're always going to be dealing with the NCAA. I know there was just one game going on, but that one game got 5 or 6 million people. There might have been women's games going on. A few years ago, the women's tournament, you didn't worry about. It's not the case anymore. Women's basketball, the NCAA tournament, draws on television a little bit now. Best case would have been preseason. I think everyone would have really said, yeah, this makes a lot of sense, preseason. My guess there is, well, beyond you would still have the big gap, was they wanted to have as much time as they could for the hybrids. When this was being laid out, the plan was they were going to go hybrid racing, and they knew they were already going to be in a crunch to be ready for St. Pete on March 8th. So we can't speed that up 2-3 weeks and do that there. We need to give them as much time as possible. So kind of a combination of all of those things is how it ended up where it is. Moving forward, I think every effort would be made either to make it a preseason event, find something to fill this gap and race about now. Because remember also next week and you have Easter. That kind of takes that off the schedule as an issue. And then make it a points paying race or make it a preseason event.
So I actually didn't have as much issue with the all-star race, if you will, being in the middle of the season. NASCAR does one middle of the season. You can take time off in the middle. The NFL doesn't do it, but the NBA does. The NBA takes a whole week and decides.
Every
and
other
has
sport
its,
has an all-star yeah. game in the middle.
The NHL has one. So actually that didn't bother me so much. I do think it works better as a preseason event, as your preseason testing, and then you could it gives you something maybe on the front end. It kind of depends on, there's a lot of moving parts in the spring. Where Easter falls is one of them. Where is the date for the St. Pete race? Where is your off-season testing plan that you accurately point out that a lot of emphasis on the hybrid testing this particular year? So maybe in the future that could be a preseason event, kind of kickstart things. But I also think, by having St. Pete, teams are ready. Teams are ready for this feature, and we saw a great performance by several different cars. We're going to talk about them in the next segment or two. People were on their game. So it wasn't like this was just preseason and nobody's really, 100% just yet. People look like they were ready. Look, I'd like to see it again. I think there's some tweaks. I don't know that I'm capable of coming up with what those tweaks are for one reason, being as I wasn't there. I didn't know the pit lane, for example, the second pit lane was not long enough, that neither pit lane was, for that matter. So, there'll probably be some tweaks if it happens again, and I'm not opposed to it.
Let's talk about ideas. We'll do that coming up in a moment at Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Hi, this is Scott McLaughlin, and you're listening to Trackside on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Still talking about the thermal million-dollar challenge from this past weekend. We'll get into some other notes as we get forward and look forward to Long Beach and lots of testing this week. Three different tracks. Indianapolis Open Test is coming up April 10th and 11th. Did you notice I went ahead and just confirmed that on Peacock over the weekend?
I did.
I made an executive decision on the fly, Kurt, and here was my thinking. Our audience... And maybe you can pass this along to PR for things like this moving forward. So I did ask. I said to someone higher on the food chain than me in the truck, I said, can I go ahead and say that we're going to air this? And the answer was, sure, why not? And my thinking here is, okay, I know that you guys are probably planning a press release on April 5th, But our audience for that event is watching this. Why don't we tell them this is the last event we will have? We don't have another race to promote this on. This is before Long Beach. So you will eliminate some people receiving the news that subscribe to this service. So that's why I said it. And
it's okay.
I also knew it would get some social media stuff. So if anybody asks why I jumped the press release, I thought it was smart to do it. And we probably should have sent out a press release ahead of time.
Well, it's okay. By the way, one thing I would like to point out as far as next year's schedule goes, Easter falls on April 20th next year. So there is a little bit more wiggle room on the front part of the schedule. You're not dealing with Easter, but I thought it was fair to bring that up since in the last segment we brought up that Easter was this particular weekend in the U.S.
Well, and we already know the date of the
actually,
Long Beach
it's Easter
Prix.
Everywhere, but
yeah. The IMSA schedule is out. I know I did a screen grab of this. This came out a couple of weeks ago. Google that in case I don't find it. Just type up 2025 IMSA schedule. And I thought I saved that graphic. But we know when IndyCar will race. We know when Long Beach and Detroit will be. So you'll find that. While I move on to our next
Long Beach topic. Long Beach is April 12th. Yeah, yep. April 11, 12, and 13. And the Detroit race is May 30, 31. So gives June 1st for IndyCars.
Therefore, we know the Indy 500, which we probably could have guesstimated as well, in 2025 is going to be, what is that, May 25th.
Yep.
May 25th of 2025 is going to be your Indy 500. Those are the dates that we know. And aside, how about that? IMSA, this was during the Sebring weekend. So this was a week and a half ago on Saturday morning. Yeah, day of the race. Or maybe it was Friday. They sent out a note the night before and said, we have an announcement the next day. And we're wondering, you know, is it going to be another sponsor partner or something else? And then we thought, well, maybe it's a manufacturer because Ganassi parted ways with Cadillac. Surely they're going somewhere. So maybe a new manufacturer is being brought in and Ganassi is going to be their anchor. Or maybe it's just announcing where Ganassi is going to be. Nope, that wasn't it. It was the schedule. Who announces the next year's schedule in March? And I didn't get a chance to go to the press conference, but when I saw John Doonan, I said, and he kind of shook his head like, yeah, that's right. I think their motivation was in the last several years, every year they announce their schedule and then people complain about conflicts, whether it be IndyCar or SRO or World Endurance Championship or Australian supercars or whatever, you know, that they all announce their schedules about the same time and they're planning them internally and they have conflicts and there are people in the paddock and there are teams that operate a multiple series and IMSA has changed their calendar. This year, for example, they moved Watkins Glen, which I was disappointed in. Watkins Glen was going to be a weekend where I could go and be at that event. And I know a lot of people in the industry that work both events. Now we have to choose between IndyCar and IMSA Watkins Glen. But the bigger conflict was with something else, with another sports car series. So they moved the 6 hour, one of their key events to appease a lot of people. So they said, I think, essentially, here's our schedule. You all adjust to it. And if there's a problem and there's a conflict, you knew it in advance and you chose to ignore it. We are not changing. So kudos to them. I like that. And now, go ahead and try to book a Long Beach hotel for 2025. See if you can maybe find one for less than $500. Maybe. I doubt it because they're all $500.
You'd
in Long
spend
Beach
your,
on race weekend.
Spend your money on the Thermo Club ticket.
Exactly. and yeah, a suite ticket at Long Beach is going to be $800 or $900 or something like that for the weekend. Minimum.
Sorry, Jim McAlean.
Yeah. Well, I love Long Beach. I've always said that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the thing, too. These other events like St. Pete and Long Beach, I'm not going to say I would choose Thermal over them because Thermal is out in the middle of nowhere. You know, and you it's 25 minutes away. You can stay in Indio Valley, you can stay in Palm Springs or whatever, and there's plenty of nice places. But I love walking from the hotel to the racetrack. And that's what St. Pete and Long Beach and Toronto is another one where you can do that. That's why street races tend to work. All right, back to thermal.
And Detroit. You could stay downtown Detroit and walk.
And walk there?
Well, or maybe.
I think we did drive last year. We weren't that close, but I'm sure there are hotels.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are hotels that are close to the track there. Yeah.
Sure.
All right, ideas. What worked? Or at least is worth exploring. Just another comment. Everyone, and I know you're never going to get full agreement on anything. And when people write on the internet, they tend to be fired up about it. Nobody is going to go to the trouble to write, yeah, it was okay. It was fine. You know, they write because they're angry or if because it was so overwhelmingly good. And I think all would admit, no, there are things that we'd like to tweak with this event. But some of the vitriol I've seen about this, of how embarrassing it was, I feel like that's a little bit over the top. Far from perfect, things that need to be done. You can say that was presented. You can present it differently, whatever. But people have been asking for IndyCar to experiment, and they did. And whether you think the rating was good enough or not, that's 813,000 people that consumed IndyCar. The other option was zero for the weekend. This event was not going to be replaced. Pushed to pass in qualifying. I think some people kind of like that.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
Added a level of strategy.
Yeah, I agree with push to pass, and I think having more push to pass is good in many situations. Maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but the one thing I'd like to see is if you're going to have heat races, I think you need to have an incentive for those heat races. There should be an incentive. When NASCAR did heat races, essentially stages, they gave points to their stage winners. And so at the end of each stage, think of it like a heat race within a race, there was some incentive to finish first versus finishing second. So, and on down the line. Now you're not have points to give in this situation, but could there be some incentive given? And maybe it's, pit stop selection at the next race, or, you can give something that isn't necessarily
cash.
Maybe it's cash.
Promote $5,000, but $5,000 still matters.
Yeah.
$5,000 is better than not having $5,000.
And the other thing that for me would need a little tweaking, and I know that Marty Snyder talked about this very quickly on the broadcast, and I was talking about it like Tuesday, was why wouldn't you just run Colton Herta's strategy and just drive around in your heat race and in your first 10 laps of the feature. I like, and many short track races do this, but eliminate one car per lap. I like that. It keeps you from being last. And there's always some battle back there of two guys don't want to be last. And so if you're, eliminating cars as you go, you could have done that with a 10 lap, you had 14 or 15 cars in the feature or in the heat races on Sunday. You could have eliminated one per lap.
So at 12, you don't want to do that starting on lap one or you'll be out of cars.
No, but you could do that.
You could still do it starting on lap six or seven, because if you want to lag back, then you're praying that there's a caution, because if there's not a caution, you're not going to catch up. So you're going to have to run the entire time. You could eliminate, say four cars from lap six through the final lap. That means you're always going to be racing. You could still save a little bit, but that's one possibility. Another is maybe you start 18. Does it have to be limited to 12? It's a 3-mile track. You could start more. And if you start 18, you almost could eliminate one car on every single lap from the start. Or maybe just everybody starts and the heat races are for starting position, which is going to matter a little bit more in that circumstance. What else? My buddy Joe Berkmeyer sent me a couple of ideas. I don't know if I was supposed to give Joe's name for these or not, but he shared our thoughts about eliminating people as we go and moving it up to 18. Do you zero out the push to pass number in the middle of the race and then give teams a choice of adding more push to pass or fresh tires? What do you prefer, to have fresh Firestones or 40 seconds of push to pass? I don't know. And if I don't know immediately, that means it's at least worth thinking about a little bit. Joe also said having a third ice cream stand would be nice too. Only two just wasn't enough. Smiley face. I was told that if we do this again, the organizers, not IndyCar or anyone else, thought we probably could add another food truck or two. We don't want to have anyone standing in any lines, and we'd like to have some shuttles. My observation from standing in line was no one was really complaining about standing in line. It was in the shade. It was 68 degrees on Saturday and Sunday. It was quite nice, and it was a really nice backdrop, and I don't think anyone felt like, oh, this is terrible standing in this line. So I kind of thought that was the least of our issues there from that aspect. You know, one thing that is worth thinking about is our attention span. And yes, we could just do a full hour and 45-minute points race, but maybe there is something to this heat race kind of format and short segments. And maybe you even make it, if it really is made for television, maybe it's a one-hour television window. And yeah, Peacock has your heat races and everything else, and we come on at 12:30 Eastern, and here we go. This is the final. It is a 20-lap sprint race. No pit stops. You can make it 18 laps, and you probably could do it without a pit stop. You could also, because that's what I was hearing, 17 or 18 laps is about what they could go. And let's just go. You know, let's have a 40-minute race with plenty of time for post-race reaction. Maybe you do still have a halftime, and that allows you to do some sort of a feature and have Joseph Newgarden, you know, show him working out without a shirt on and try to bring in the female demographic or something creative in that regard. So it's worth a think. I'm not smart enough to know what the right answer is, but maybe that's an idea.
I actually did think it might feel like a 1 hour time window when we started at 12:30. I thought, well, there's only two 10-lap heat races, and then the feature's 20 laps. I thought this might be over by 1:15. And of course, it ran longer than that. But,
you know, maybe eliminate push to pass for the leader. That one's been thrown out there a little bit as well.
I always like inverting the field or inverting the top six. When you're in a short track race and they draw a number and someone in the crowd gets to decide where the pole qualifier starts and he starts fifth or starts sixth, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's got to be random. You can't know what it is ahead of time. And it could be where you win and that's where you are. And then you could add in points. And I know that gets really massively confusing.
That's
what short track racing has always been.
You got to be able to consume it if you're going to be on television like that. You got to be able to figure it out or explain it in relatively short order.
If it's an exhibition, easy to do those kind of things.
Yep.
If it's a points race, you could have a thing. I still think you could do a heat race. They've done that before. And you could score points for a heat race. My perfect scenario would be is, because we all know we'd like to see the offseason shorter. I think maybe my best case scenario is this is an exhibition. This is the preseason official test. And then maybe we do something for television on Sunday in mid-February. You know, it's the week before the Daytona 500. Even if it's Super Bowl Sunday, if you do it at 12:30, Super Bowl coverage gets started at 2:30 or 3. Get it done before that. Have something else on that day. And then you got to fill this gap. So that's along with trying to find a third manufacturer and ironing out their TV rights and everything else. That has to be high on the priority list, is we need something between St. Pete and Long Beach. Speaking of which, we will talk about Long Beach and its future coming up, and we'll also get you set for what else is in store for Hour 2 next on Trackside.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Hi, this is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, coming up in hour number two, we still have a couple of things that are not confirmed for the Indianapolis 500. I'll let you know what I think. I'm starting to whittle some things down from what I've learned over the past weekend and talking to a couple of the drivers that I've mentioned that I think are in play, or at least were in play, for one or more of the seats. We will do that. We've got some television notes to get into and plenty of other things. Oh, and your tweets and comments, still going back to what we witnessed at Thermal and the future of the Long Beach Grand Prix, all in store. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hi, this is Kyle Kirkwood, and you're listening to Trackside.
Hour number two. Thanks for joining us on Tuesday once again. So that will be Tuesday, April 2nd from 7 until 9, then Monday, April the 8th at 7 o'clock, and then Tuesday the 16th at 7 o'clock. After that, TBD, because hopefully the Indiana Pacers will be embarking on a long playoff run. I think the regular season ends on the 14th, so that means the playoffs start, what, usually it's the 19th. Usually on Friday or Saturday, although I guess it might start early if they are in a play-in game situation. So I will admit I was not working in the NBA when the play-in game was part of it, so I don't know how soon those start after the regular season. So maybe those do start as soon as Tuesday or Wednesday. As always, check your local listings or just call Kurt at home, and he'll give you the update as to when the show is going to start. Twitter, the Xbox, at KevinLee23, at Kurt Cavan. I have a lot of pictures of Bruce Jenner / Caitlyn Jenner doing my job back in the day. Caitlyn was at the Thermal Club over the weekend. I saw Caitlyn walking by, and who I also saw, so I didn't see Caitlyn until someone told me Caitlyn was there, and then said, oh yeah, okay. And then I saw the back of someone slightly limping a little bit, you know, bigger kind of guy, said in my talk back and kind of the intercom, hey, I think that might be John Elway. Does anyone know if John Elway is here? And I'm looking at the back of him. So I said, well, let's send a camera over there without getting right in his face. Just kind of stand a little ways away and give us a shot. And we look at, yep, that's John Elway. I don't know if he's a member or not. Someone told me that he is or was, but we hung around for 2 or 3 hours after the race, and as you do, ate ice cream and tacos until they kicked us out. Actually, we left before they even kicked us out, but he was still around there for a while. So I suspect he might be a member, and I think there are probably a lot of people there that are members that we're not really aware of. That was the other interesting part, is we were kind of looking for members to kind of talk. And Townsend found one, Kyle Washington, who's very open. And Kyle drives in various series and SRO. He's done Michelin pilot races. And that was his balcony that they were on. We know Don Cusick is fine with being public. Mike Long, who's one of the partners with Arrow McLaren. He's the former CEO of Arrow. He was fine. But as you might imagine, when you have a lot of money, you may not want everyone knowing you have a lot of money. So, you know, when I saw some posts of teams with who their embedded member was, it would say first name, last initial, things like that. So I get it. Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to hide, so I'm not really worried about those things. But other people have a little more. More tweets.
Or a lot more, as the case may be.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. When I mentioned if my next investment pays off, you know, people want to know how I'm investing. That would make me a member. Well, the reality is I don't even have any money to invest, so it's not going to happen. But luckily, we've got a chance to be there a guest one or two days a year. Unedited Twitter comments. This is from Alex Kane, 1776. What a horrible representation of IndyCar on worldwide TV. Whoever came up with the rules should be fired. Should have had primary and alternate tire options, pit stops, unlimited fuel and tires availability 30-lap race with inverted restart at halfway. So please, Kurt, let everyone know in their office that Alex does not want Mark Miles, Jay Fry, anyone else that has any involvement. There's some job openings. Alex has fired them all. You're not welcome to come back anymore. Yeah. There's no room for any conversation. And Alex is probably not privy to all the things, but we told you why they couldn't have pit stops. Alternate tires. I think that'd be good for the future. I also feel certain that adds some expense that you've got to bring. Also adds more uncertainty of what we're doing for the weekend. You know, is it really worth it hauling an extra truck and all these tires? And they also did not run alternate tires, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they did. Last year at the test?
I would say probably not. Probably not.
Usually don't. So that adds some uncertainty. They knew what tire they had. They knew at least this is doable. We knew it was going to be high deg, but this is the same tire that they ran in the test in 2023. So they had an idea of what they were going to be facing with. You bring in a different tire, then you bring in some uncertainty.
I'll tell you what I'd like to see once in a while during the course of a season is a dust storm. You talk about all of a sudden you couldn't see and all of a sudden it was dusty on the racetrack. And, you know, that first heat in particular, it was like getting rain on a street circuit where it made things a little slippery. But it was interesting. The camera angle picked it up pretty well. It was dusty.
So is that as good as Bernie's water cannon idea?
Yeah,
that we have a dust cannon?
Bernie Ecclestone had a water cannon idea to help spice things up. But yeah,
he wasn't wrong.
The dust storm was a good little mix into the equation that I didn't expect.
L. William Spencer says, Colton said it best. It sucked, I'm sure, for people watching. Maybe we can make the tires, William says, maybe we can make the tires out of concrete so they last, or maybe cars can pull trailers to make sure they are slow. Is this good racing? And Colton and I just don't get it.
Well,
so what he's talking about is the first part of the race. And we've already thrown out some ideas that would eliminate that. I asked a few people, should we, if it's done again in this format, do we want to have a tire change at the break? And the answer I got from racing people was no. Tire degradation and who manages it is what creates good racing. If everyone's on the same life tire, that's the problem. And we did see that. Colton Herta had better tire life because of that circumstance, was able to pass people. Alex Palou, you know, we haven't talked about this at all, but I think if there were odds on this weekend, if his weren't 10-1, then they're doing it wrong, because we all know that he's better at saving tires than anyone else. And that should have been the easy pick. And probably the fact that Dixon didn't qualify up with him kind of eliminated a contender from that situation. Maybe he could have matched him. There's really no one else that can in these circumstances.
Well, keep in mind, and we haven't really talked about this, but Alex Palou finished eighth last year at St. Pete and then went on a tremendous roll. He actually was better at this year's St. Pete race. If that's a foretelling of things to come from Alex Palou and what we saw over the weekend as part of that, Alex Palou could get hot again. I mean, he's just really, really in a good spot.
What I think kept Alex Palou, and I asked him this off the air, and I kind of alluded to it a little bit in one of my reports, that, you know, don't count out Ganassi yet. But one of the reasons why six was their best last week, because how many times last year did we see Palou or Dixon go longer than everyone on the first stint? They're saving tires. They're saving fuel. They do the overcut, as we call it. They wait for everyone to pit, and then they run fast laps with clear track, and they come out in the lead certainly move up stops. And I asked Palou, I said, if that caution doesn't come out on lap 26 or 28 or whatever, is it a different story? And he said, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Scott and I, we're going to move forward. I think if the caution is anywhere after the end of that first stint, he's probably on the podium. But here is reason for optimism for the rest of the paddock. Because, again, what he's really good at is going fast without using up the tires. Well, the new scenario does not create a lot of tire deck. The test at Barber this past week from a couple of drivers that were there said no tire deck. And the reason there is less tire deck this year is because, again, they expected the cars to weigh 50 pounds more than they do, maybe 70 pounds more than they do. They lightened them up as much as they could because they knew the hybrid was going to add, I forget the number, 50, 70 pounds, whatever. So they were going to be heavier. So they needed a more durable tire to be able to withstand the extra weight. Turns out the cars are lighter right now until summer. So that means these harder tires are not producing deg and tire wear, which you need to separate the pack. So, you know, we kind of need to hope the cautions come out at the right time. We may need to get lucky at this point. I'm hoping it's not all like that, but it's going to be a little bit challenging for a little while. But with that, that's the advantage that Pello has had, that when people feel like their tires are gone, he somehow babies them enough to where they've still got life.
So what you're saying is
the season might be his time.
So what you're saying is he might not clinch the title till the last race.
Correct. I mean, he's still going to win somewhere in the first half of the season, and he's going to be in the top three in points, but it shouldn't be a runaway.
Right.
And, you know, who knows? Who knows when we get to the hybrid portion? But, you know, if that matters in the second half, then that's going to be certainly an advantage for him. What else do we have on the Twitter inbox? Some suggestions to visit the Joshua Tree National Park, Palm Springs Aerial Tramway. I went for a nice hike. I don't really even know what mountain I was on. It was a smaller mountain because I made it to the top. I'm not going to the top of a big mountain, but it was good. Paul J. Ingram 56 points out that the Laguna Seca noise concerns, this is the headline, are muffled as neighbors drop their lawsuit. Plaintiffs settle for $75,000 in legal fees. So someone figured out something with that. So that's good to hear. We'll be able to continue racing at Laguna Seca. Gunner D84 says, love the race this weekend. However, I feel like the announcing crew overemphasized the non-points race weekend. Professional athletes are competitive no matter what the circumstances. Ask Michael Jordan. By saying it so much, it was almost like it was an apology. Maybe. I think our feeling on that would be we understand not everyone, especially on NBC, has read the stories on IndyCar.com or on social media or watched it on Peacock. And when they flip on and they see, well, why is IndyCar doing a 20-lap race with a halftime and without a pit stop? So you have to understand not everyone is watching the entirety. So my opinion would be we needed to mention that.
No, I think so. You had to explain things to people, and it, you know, honestly, it wasn't a complicated format. You know, you gotta give credit to what was really the case. Top six in your heat, okay, I can figure that out. Then you go to a 12 car, you know, final round with a 10 lap intermission time. You know, and it really wasn't that complicated. Can't change tires. You know, maybe you can shed some light. There was some questions about who got to change what during the intermission. I didn't quite get that. It wasn't really discussed on the broadcast.
So I know the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan team was angry that Christian Lundgaard took contact in the start of the race when Dixon got into the back of Grosjean, out of control, not through anything he can control. Runs into Rinus VK. I think it was then VK's car that hit the side of Lundgaard's. So they wanted to change the side pod. They were told they can't. However, Colton Herta was allowed to change the front wing. I don't know other than, one, it could be timing. So when I went up to Rob Edwards and said, I hear on the radio, it sounds like you have damage. What is it and when can you change it? And he said, yep, we can change the front wing, but not until heat race two is complete. It's impound. But the idea there being, we're not allowing anyone that was in heat one more time to repair the car than those that are in heat two. So when all the cars get back to pit lane at the end of heat two, then we can make that change. What I don't know is if possibly Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan didn't understand that part of it, or if there were specific things that you can only change wings, but you cannot change body parts. So I think that's something that my opinion would be, if you can somehow do it in the 7 minutes that you have, go for it. Why keep someone from racing? And why allow the opportunity for parts to come off and cause hazard in that case? So that's probably something there. And I understand why Ray Hall would be upset. If they did ask and they said, nope, no matter what time it is, you can't change it, I think they have a beef there.
And Pietro Fittipaldi was not allowed to participate. Explain that a little closer.
So I would believe that the rules said everybody runs with a full tank. Now, were people going to play with that? Probably. But when it became apparent that they were well under full, because on their radio, on lap one, I hear, sorry, we miscalculated fuel and you don't have enough to run 10 laps. So that clearly means you did not fill up the tank, since you should be able to run 16 to 18 laps. So the others might not have filled up their tank, but unless you were going to check everyone's tank, there was no way to see that. That would be my guess, that they were all said to fill it. Did everyone fill it? I don't know. But that one was obvious that they did not. So therefore, he was disqualified.
Kind of a tough harsh end. Yeah.
Harsh, but if that's in the rule book, if it said you have to fill your tank, then that seems pretty cut and paste on that one. So I'm going to tend to say that they have a little bit of a beef on the Lundgaard side of things, that if you waited to do it until after heat two was complete, you ought to be able to do, you know, whether it's change a suspension part or whatever in the time allotted. But yeah, if it said fill up the tank, because then what you would have is people going light on fuel, because then the car weighs even less and you can save tires more. That would be the advantage to not filling up. So I didn't ask if everyone was filling full. Generally, you fill the car only as full as it needs to be for however many laps.
Yep.
They know if you're going to run 10 laps, we need this much fuel. We want to have enough fuel to run 10.3 laps. Just there should be a cup in the tank when we get back home.
Yep, yep, yep.
Left-hander Lon asks, IMS usually has open testing, free fan viewing once or twice in March or April. What is scheduled for this year? JJ must not have been listening to the program in past weeks. We've mentioned this a few times.
Thursday and Friday on the road course for teams that have not been testing the hybrid. So you won't have Ganassi, Penske, and Arrow McLaren. Not sure where those...
And Andretti,
I'm not sure where those two fall, given that they have tested less than Penske and Ganassi. I'm sure it's just the Voigt, Junkos, Meyer-Shank, Carpenter, you know, Ray Hall, that group of teams. So that's Thursday and Friday. And then April 10 and 11 is the open test. And in all cases, you know, you can always go down where the museum in the parking lot and watch in the turn two mounds and the little stands that have been there in front of the museum. So there is some viewing opportunities.
And I think there are some teams taking a test day, you know, probably teams that didn't go to Barber last week, early next week is what I've heard. I've not seen a schedule, but I think there might be some on the road course Monday, Tuesday.
I think it's, yes. And it might even be earlier than that.
Earlier than Monday, Tuesday?
Like Saturday. But I don't know. Oh, okay. So if we hear cars Saturday, you'll know what that is.
Okay. Sunday on Easter, but don't know.
These are
private tests, but the great thing about IMS is they don't lock the front gate. Now, is that still true? Do we know that's true?
You know, I thought about that with the museum closed till April of 2025, about, you know, how much access there would be. I would say it's still available there. But that is a good question, and I'll try to get an answer to that before we have our next show.
Okay. And the 10th and 11th is going to be on Peacock. I don't have the times yet, but it's probably a lot. It's probably like 6 hours a day with
rest up, Kevin.
Me and Hinch chatting, and Dylan in Georgia on pit lane, and I think George is only there for like one day. So
does Dylan have to stay with his mom and dad?
I don't know. I don't think he does. I think he has the option. They'll get him a hotel if he likes.
Okay.
But I think sometimes he does choose to stay with his mom and dad.
Okay.
The Speedway Gay says, love the concept of thermal, but what tweaks would make for more interesting first segment without losing what made the second segment exciting? Allow a tire change, but a compound with extreme fall off. Payout structure that gives back half reason to fight for position. There would be more appetite for 9 hours of testing in January, February to shorten the offseason, and I don't like non-points race during the season. If thermal moves to preseason, what could fill its place? What could fill the gap that still remains in April? Yeah, that's something I've been asking, and others have too. And the third was, saw complaints about the confusing format. Seemed pretty simple if you boil it down to essentials. Group one qualifying set, field for heat one, group two, heat two, top six, and each heat advance. Not sure what was so confusing about that. All good points, I think.
Well, and the other thing is, it really felt very similar to the Firestone qualifying session that we see on road courses and street circuits. You have half the field in one qualifying group, top six advance, half the field in the second one, top six advance, fast 12, move to the final six. So it really followed a consistent format. So in that respect, it had some consistency to the rest of the season. It wasn't really portrayed as such. It was portrayed as a heat race, but it was very similar in the structure.
You know, a lot of us joked about the rules and it was going to take us 10 minutes to explain it. And that's if you really get into all the things that the teams need to know.
Sure.
But the essence were what you just talked about. It wasn't that hard from that standpoint. You know, if you want to get into what adjustments are allowed on the cars and things like that, yeah, you're getting in the weeds, but that's the case with anything. If you want to get into the rules of any sport, there are a lot of rules in sports, but the basics were, yeah, not super hard to figure out. At 500 Indy 1911, Brian says, I noticed a lot of the balconies of the houses were empty, were a lot of members not on site. I'm glad IndyCar tried something new, but didn't seem to have much of an event feel to it. What was the feedback you got from club members? So you're right that there were a lot of balconies not filled because the reality is, my understanding is, you know, there's not a lot of people there all the time. The fortunate thing for these members is this is not their only home. It might not be their second home. It's probably one of three homes. It definitely is one of two homes because ain't nobody living there in the summertime because it's 1,000 degrees.
Yeah.
So it's empty. And the two times I've been there, so I went there for the spring test, but I've been there on a non-weekend. Jackson and I went out as a guest of Don Cusick last January, and he drove some of Don's cars. And I'm going to say when we would go in for lunch, there'd be eight people there. You know, it was us and one other table. There were probably at most six cars on the track. So however, I don't know how many homes are there, but I'm going to say most times, you know, there's probably only 20 or 30% of the people are there at a time. People come in for the weekend. They kind of come and go. And here's another incentive for IndyCar. You're trying to introduce your sport to people who might be interested. You know, I know you'd think, well, wait a minute. These are people that live at a country club racetrack. Surely they're IndyCar fans. Ah, decent chance they are not. You know this. Car people are not necessarily race fans. Race fans are not necessarily car people. It's a different element. I don't know how many people I've met over the years that are car people that do not watch motorsports.
Yeah.
So you have, but I feel like that audience, that demographic is more likely if you really give them access or explain it to them, get them hooked in some way, than say a football fan or a baseball fan, because they at least like cars. So you're halfway there. It's kind of like what we talk about, that your best chance to grow the audience is from a NASCAR fan or a Formula One fan or NHR fan. They may not like IndyCar, but at least they are predisposed to watching people go around in circles or in twisty road courses.
That's why, and I brought this up earlier, I thought the thing that really intrigues me about the event, and this may sound like a strange thing to be intrigued by, but I would like to know more about the embedding of the members with the teams. What did teams do? Did they put them on the pit stand? Did they, you know, do shoots with the wives and the race cars? You know, I mean, did you do things? Did you capitalize on the moment, or was it just, you know, they had the Friday night draw and you got up there and you got to meet Joseph Newgarden, if you were the member that got to do that? You know, what kind of involvement did those members have?
I'm going to guess they had about as much as they wanted. IndyCar teams,
well, I'm sure
they do something like this. You know, a fan wins a charity auction. I've seen people get this opportunity, and they're very welcoming to just someone that they know there is no benefit for them to do this. It is just doing something nice for someone, and they do things nice for people. It's a friendly environment. In this case, they're going to do that, and they're going to realize this might be the guy that could solve all of our problems, because there is no one there that's a member of that club that does not have the ability to become a partner in the race team in some way or form. So I guarantee you, every team opened up the doors and said, what would you like to do?
Yeah, I agree.
The weekend is yours.
I knew the teams would do that. I'm curious about what they offered and then what was accepted. You know, did the member take advantage of that to really become embedded? And, you know, one of the ways, and it's difficult to do it in this particular case, but usually one of the ways you can embed somebody is to give them a personal stake in this. You know, maybe they were going to get, and we talked about this at the start, you know, maybe months ago, that they were going to share, if what the car won 50 grand, the owner would get, you know, the member would get 50 grand. And there was some of that kicked around, and it was almost like betting, if you will.
I think that was one of the ideas, but I think they wanted the members to buy into that and
basically add
to the purse, and they must not have had enough. You know, these people are wealthy for a reason, because they don't give away their money.
I'm just saying
that's why it's not a lock and guarantee that they're going to put their money into an IndyCar program, because they're billionaires for a reason, because they're all really smart.
That's right. I just that whole concept, I thought, was really a great opportunity if it could be executed in the way that we're imagining.
Lynn, formerly the first Spurs fan, Lynn at IndyCar, says, Friday and Saturday was awesome for testing. Teams can use the data for other races like Portland and Indy GP. Sunday event had great coverage by NBC. Hopefully IndyCar can improve on the product. Future of the sport, great event to attract new partners, 2025. So there you go on that, positive. From that standpoint, all right, we need to get to some news items that I've talked about. Long Beach, Indy 500, what we've missed. Maybe we'll do, this could save till next week too. On Track, who helped their cause the most, who benefited the most, that might be something we can do this week. If not, that can come up next week. Stay with us. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Hi, this is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, let's get to some news items here. Indy 500, we mentioned testing coming up April 10th and 11th on Peacock at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We believe there are going to be 35 cars entered. We have heard, I believe, 33 car and driver confirmations right now, correct?
Yes, that's
correct.
What
we are still missing is a second entry from Dale Coyne, because we know Nolan Siegel, who, if we don't get to it, that's certainly one of those. Nolan Siegel impressed some people, and young man is probably already moving up the list of free agent options for 2025 after almost making the feature and being faster than anybody. It was great for Nolan, but we know he's in a coin car. We don't know who's in the second car. Everyone is saying it's Catherine Legg. I asked Catherine Legg at Sebring. I said, I'm going to mention this, and unfortunately she was crashed out early before I got to it, but I'm going to mention that, you know, you are likely to be in the Indy 500. Would I be inaccurate if I said that? And she said, well, I haven't signed anything yet, you know, but I'm optimistic, essentially what she's saying. So I think that's going to happen, but it's not been announced. So until it's announced, I can't guarantee that. I expect it because I'm hearing it from too many different places. And, you know, kind of the word is that it would be more than just the Indy 500. I think she has one sports car conflict with maybe it's Worldwide Technology Raceway, but one of the summer races that she would do her primary job in sports cars. But that would fill a need for Dale Coyne, because not only does he need an Indy 500 driver, but he needs some funding for other races. And presumably her program would pay more than just what the ask is for the Indy 500. However, I have to believe Jack Harvey is still efforting to be in the Indy 500, and he's already with that team, and he's not in the 500. He has 14 events, not what we just saw. He was there helping Nolan Siegel, good on him, helping Colin Brown. He's not running Long Beach. He's not running Toronto. And he's not running the Indy 500. If he came up with the funding, and if that's not done yet with Catherine Legg, or if there's any kind of a snag, I think that's possible. And I think he almost kind of alluded to that when I interviewed him on the air, that, you know, I'd like to do more. And I think maybe he did say that. Now, that also means he could run with another team. Maybe he is thinking about the Able seat. And if they're filled and I decide I like that and find the budget, maybe I slot in over there. I'm not aware of any other opportunity. I think those are the only possibilities. You know, and I suppose all the other candidates that we've talked about, the Devlin DeFrancescos, the Benjamin Petersons, the Stefan Wilsons, until that's signed, and who knows whether they announce it immediately after it's signed, it is open.
I don't think this matters, but it is worth pointing out about in Jack Harvey's case, he's running for a Honda team. Abel's team will be a Chevy team. I don't think that matters, but it is certainly something to consider.
Could be. Yeah, I don't think.
I don't think it matters either.
We saw a driver last year that is a Honda driver drive a Chevy in the Indy 500, so they can make.
That was pretty extenuating circumstance.
It's extreme. Did Connor drive for both manufacturers in a planned circumstance? No, those were both Chevys. When he did Ed Carpenter Racing and Carlin was a Chevy. Now, I'm sure, including last year, yeah. But that was because he had nothing guaranteed. But Connor drove for both last year. He started in a Chevy. He finished in a Honda. So there's that. Here's what I think is happening. Well, here's what I think could be happening with Abel Motorsports. I won't mention names, but we've all thrown out all the names that are possibilities there. RC Enerson, Benjamin Petersen, Devlin DeFrancesco, Stefan Wilsson, Oriel Servia's name has come up, Charlie Kimball. So at least two of those this weekend said, nope, I'm withdrawing from consideration. I'm not going to do that. And here, I think, is what, if I'm one of those drivers I'm looking at, the easiest scenario for all involved is for RC Enerson, because the car is built. It needs some tweaks because there are always updates every year. So they would need to do that. But the car is there. It's ready. The driver is driven for the team. But if it's not RC Enerson, and he has been public saying, we need a primary sponsor. So we know that's a significant amount of money that they are short. It's not, we need an associate. We need a primary sponsor to be able to guarantee this happening. So then plan B is the Dallara chassis that Abel has purchased on their own. I don't know if they have it yet. I can't remember whether they have it, but if they do, it is not put together. So I've heard different that either they have it and it's still in the box, or no, it's not even arrived yet. It's arriving any day. Either way, it needs to be put together. I doubt that it's going to be ready to be on track April 10th and 11th. So you're going to be behind. Car has not been on track. You may have some teething problems on that Tuesday of practice. Already, if you have to pick somebody who's going to get bumped, we're going to start with that car. Fair or not. So what is the asking price? Don't know. But considering that's probably the only seat still available, it's somewhere between $1 million and $1.5 million. So if I have money, if I have budget, am I going to use it? Now, if it's something that's just going to go away and it's somebody else's, maybe. But am I going to use that when there's not, when it's a longer shot of making the race? And then you also think, if I don't make the race, what does that do for my driver moving forward? Is that damaging for Devlin DeFrancesco if he tries to qualify? And I think people would understand this is going to be difficult, and that would be a massive win to be able to make the race. But as they look for partners for next year and look for teams, that might not be the best thing for Devlin. Might not be the best thing for Benjamin Peterson. If I'm Charlie Kimball, and the last time I did it in a program that really wasn't what you'd hope for, I'm not doing that if I'm Charlie Kimball. I'm Oriel Servia, and I want to have one more Indy 500. I'm not doing this and finishing up in that circumstance. I want to have a chance to make the race. I want to know I've got a really good chance to make the race, and this is not disrespect to that team. They are really good, but they are going to be up against it. This is going to be hard, and this should be celebrated if they make the race. We maybe didn't celebrate what they did enough last year. I think we tried to, because what Enerson and that team did to stay out of the last row shootout was amazing, was one of the great accomplishments of the month, and without a whole lot of drama. And maybe the same thing for Stefan Wilson. You know, same thing. I don't know that I would do that if I'm Stefan. If I'm trying to keep things alive, if he gets people to pay for this and you don't make the race, your career is probably over. I think you'd be better off continuing to try to manage those relationships and saying, we're working right now on 2025, and we're going to try to get in a proper program where we get to do the preseason tests. So with all that said, here's my theory. I think either R.C. Enerson runs the car that his family owns, or if they don't find any money and Bill Abel decides he doesn't want to fund it, or if the Enerson family decides they don't want to fund it out of what else they have. If the Abels decide we want to run our new car in the race, and they don't find anyone that is super keen on that number, do they put Jacob Abel in the car, understanding he might not make the race, but also using it as development? Let's get him through the month of May. He's still running for a championship in Indy next. This is not going to crush his career if he doesn't make the race, because enough people like me on television are going to say, this is going to be really hard to do. And people like Hinchcliffe and Townsend Bell are going to say this. And he can go through this and they can learn and they can prepare. And if they make it, it is a huge win. If they don't, what's kind of like what R.C. Enerson did with Top Gun a few years ago.
Yeah.
People knew that they weren't supposed to make the race, and no one held that against them. How's that for a theory?
No,
and
I
swear the Abels did not tell me this. I've not asked Jacob if he's going to run the race. I've not asked Bill if they would run Jacob in the race. Last time I asked was when we asked Jacob on this show, and I don't think he really gave us much of an answer, did he, about running the Indy 500.
So I think the price for that ride is going to be higher than it should be ordinarily, because there are just so few opportunities. And to your point, if I had that kind of money, I'm not sure that that would be the situation I'd want to put myself in if I've done well in some other races, as Devlin DeFrancesco has done, as Stefan Wilson has done. So all that said, I agree with your logic. I've thought it was going to be R.C. Enerson or maybe no one, just because I don't know that anybody's going to pay the kind of money that they're going to want and should expect given the lack of rides. And therefore, I can see how you'd connect the dots back to a development program for Jacob.
Okay. Long Beach. This story has been percolating in the paddock for a while. I thought some people were going to write this 2 or 3 weeks ago. We were going to tape on a Monday a couple weeks ago, and that was one of the reasons, because I thought it was going to get posted that day by someone else. Racer wrote the story today saying multiple sources tell Racer that NASCAR has been actively pursuing the 50% stake in the Long Beach race that became available for acquisition last year by the estate of the late businessman Kevin Kalkoven. Many of the same sources tell racer the Penske Entertainment, owners of IndyCar, IMS, and the promoter of other events, is trying to block NASCAR's efforts. So what I had heard a few weeks ago, without nearly enough sourcing to mention on the show, and I really thought somebody else with more sourcing was just going to write it. At one point, I had heard Penske's got it. And I thought, that's great, because I know I said this last year. You know, NASCAR has taken a liking to street races, and my fear was they were going to go try to buy Long Beach and buy Toronto and other things like that. And then I heard, no, NASCAR's still in play. It was the last I heard a couple of weeks ago. I think Liberty was in the mix. I have to assume, if it's open, that Green Savory was in conversation. But it's down to those two. NASCAR probably can overpay because this is a ready-made event. They don't have to mess with Coliseum anymore. It would be a perfect situation. And it's a fear we've had for a while. That would not be good for IndyCar if NASCAR gets control of that. They are unlikely to invite IndyCar. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. Maybe Roger Penske can make that happen. Here's what I'm hoping can happen is that, you know, it's going to be pricey. And I believe Jerry Forsyth, his family owns half of this as well. I'm hoping that there is a relationship there and that Roger Penske gets some consideration in this. And Penske Entertainment might be able to pay more than they would if it's an IndyCar event. Here's what I'd think about if I'm Penske Entertainment. Let's purchase it for more than we can make money off of if it's an IndyCar race, and let's invite NASCAR. Let's have NASCAR. Let's do our own doubleheader, and let's collect that $15 to $20 million in TV revenue. And that will help pay that. And you can still have IMSA there. There's room on that schedule. Now, paddock space is going to be a real problem. You're going to have to really get creative on what you're doing for paddock space in that regard. But I'd work on trying to figure that out. So, you know, as someone who is more invested in IndyCar, I'm hoping that that is how that is resolved. But that's been out there for a while. I don't know which way it's going. I don't know if the Kalkoven family versus the Forsyth family owns 51 to 49 or not, but that's all I know at this point. But it's out there and it's being talked about, and it's a pretty big deal.
It's a very big deal. The history is obviously something you can't buy, and it's kind of ready to go.
Okay, what we missed and more coming up next, Trackside.
Hi, this is Colton Herta, and you're listening to Trackside on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Final segment, what we've missed. One other, I think, good question via Twitter, For the Love of Indy asked, has adding ballast in place of the absent hybrid been investigated, considering the lack of tire wear until the hybrid is introduced? I've talked about that, and others have talked about it. I've not asked anyone with authority or an engineer what they think about that. But yeah, that's a good point. It is something that maybe could be considered. It'd slow the cars down a little bit. We like them to be as quick as possible, but probably good racing is the most important part. What else? Oh, we didn't mention this. Season 1 of 100 Days to Indy is going to be available on Netflix starting on April 4th. So I think that's a big deal. It's also available on the CW app. Paramount Plus is how you can get it internationally. Season 2 on the CW is going to debut April 26th at 9 p.m. And if that goes well, maybe Season 2 eventually on Netflix as well. NASCAR ratings continue to be up. I don't think it's a coincidence that they had a Netflix special over the winter, and they're up like 6 to 10% most weekends. So hopefully that does help things a little bit. Able Motorsports announced that short track driver Taylor Ferns, who has won in several different disciplines, is going to run ovals in their Indy Next program in a fourth car this year. So really cool news there. We're out of time. We will do more coming up next week, Tuesday night at 7 on Trackside.